item one on the Judicial Branch Report and Recommendations from the 2011 Summit on Judicial Diversity. The Honorable Brenda Harbenfort, Chair of the Judicial Summit Planning Committee. The Honorable James Lambden, Judicial Summit Planning Committee and Chair, Access and Fairness Advisory Committee. And Senator Joe Dunn, Judicial Summit Planning Committee and Executive Director of the State Bar, to present.
Good afternoon, Madam Chief Justice, members of the Judicial Council, and guests. I wish to thank you for the opportunity to present you the report and recommendations from the Second Summit on Judicial Diversity, which was held on September 7, 2011, here at the AOC. I'm Judge Brenda Harbenforte of the Alameda County Superior Court. I served on the Judicial Council, had the honor of serving the judiciary and the people of the state from 1996 to 1999. I chaired RuPro during my term. I'm also a former dean of the Judicial College and chair of the New Judge Education Planning Committee. I've also served as the first chair of the State Bar's Council on Access and Fairness when the then Board of Governors established the council in 2007 as a diversity pipeline think tank. I want to thank you, Chief Justice, and also some current and past members of the Judicial Council, particularly Judge Erica Yu, a past member, and Justice Douglas Miller, for your support and leadership in promoting judicial branch diversity. I want to thank Justice Miller for inviting me here to present this report as an opportunity to inform and educate the Council on the status of judicial diversity in California and to present the recommendations that have been made by colleagues on the bench and state bar leaders. Finally, I want to thank the members of the Summit Planning Committee, two of whom are sitting here next to me this afternoon, Justice James Lambden, as you know, from the First District Court of Appeal, as well as Senator Joe Dunn, who's the Executive Director and CEO of the State Bar. I want also to thank AOC Senior Attorney Donna Clay Conti, who's out in the audience there, as well as State Bar Attorney Pat Lee, who is the Special Assistant for Diversity and Bar Relations at the State Bar. You each have the 2011 final report and recommendations that was issued following the summit. I know you've read every page of it already, so I'm not going to go through all of it. I'm going to talk generally about the status of diversity in our courts. Senator Dunn will then briefly talk about the State Bar Board of Trustees' review of the report and the action that the Board of Trustees took, as well as recommendations for future collaborative efforts by the State Bar and the Judicial Council. And then Justice Lambden will put forth a formal recommendation to the Council. As a former council member, I know that tackling sensitive issues of statewide importance is a necessary component of the job. When I was on the council in the mid-90s, the council received and acted upon the report and recommendations regarding racial and ethnic bias in the courts. We also took on and discussed other transformative issues for our branch, including things such as the one-day, one-trial rules. We knew that what we were doing would not always be the popular thing to do, but we knew that with courage and with strong leadership and with resolve, that we could do what was the right thing to do. What I'm going to do now is to go through some slides and talk with you about some recommendations. First, a word from our sponsor, the State Bar, that our State Bar access and fairness activities are funded through voluntary contributions to the State Bar, and no mandatory dues are used. I'm going to give you a little bit of history about how these summits came about. In 2005, the State Bar created a diversity pipeline task force, and I was fortunate to chair the court's working group. The State Bar started planning for its first summit in June of 2006, and I was given the task of contacting Chief Justice George to see if Chief Justice George would support that summit. and would participate in it and serve as the keynote speaker. He enthusiastically supported the summit, served as a keynote speaker. This was part of the work that he'd already been doing with the legislative branch as well as with the governor's office in terms of increasing diversity on the bench. The Judicial Council and the Administrative Office of the Courts through the Access and Fairness Advisory Committee, which was chaired by Justice Lamdin at the time, co-sponsored that June 2006 summit. SB 56, a bill by Senator Dunn, required collection of demographic data by the governor, the state bar, and the AOC. That passed. The state legislature tied new judgeships to increase judicial diversity, partly through AB 159. And at the end of that summit, the 2006 summit stakeholders agreed to hold another summit in 5 years. So in May 2010, we began planning for the 2011 summit as a means of providing a five-year status report on what efforts we've made since the 2006 summit and what accomplishments and achievements we could celebrate. In June of 2011, the Executive and Planning Committee authorized co-sponsorship of that 2011 summit, and in July 2011, Chief Justice Cantil Sakuwe and State Bar President Aber signed a summit invitation inviting more than 200 members of the legislative, executive, and judicial branch to attend the summit, as well as State Bar members and members of the legal community. And in September 2011, that summit was convened at the Administrative Office of the Courts, our final report issued in August of this year. Why do we value judicial diversity? As former Chief Justice Ronald George stated when he gave his remarks at our 2006 summit, a diverse bench not only will maintain and enhance our state's tradition of having an excellent judiciary, but will serve to reinforce the guiding principle that we're committed to making our justice system fair and accessible to all. Former past ABA President Dennis Archer has said that if you recognize that it's the ability of citizens to come into court to make sure that they can have their disputes resolved is what keeps people from taking to the streets to resolve their disputes, then we understand that diversity in the legal profession is critical for our very democracy to survive. And in an editorial in the American Judicature Society magazine in March and April of 2010, there was the observation, which I think we all know, the judges can and do influence each other. We talk about cases on and off the bench. We exchange ideas. And a diverse judiciary leads to an interplay and exchange of divergent viewpoints, which in turn prevents bias and leads to a better, more informed decision-making process that in the end is greater than the sum of its parts. Let me talk a little bit about what our diversity in the court looks like. This slide shows you what population is as compared to the judiciary statewide. This is as of December of 2011, end of last year. You'll see that California has, as we knew, has become a majority-minority state. Caucasians comprise less than 40% of our state's population. They are more than 72% of our bench. African Americans are about 6.2% of the population, with about 5.7% of the bench. Asian Pacific Islanders, 13.1% of the population, about 5.8% of the bench. And Latinos, who comprise almost 40% of our population, about 8.2% representation in our judiciary. But let's talk about the things that we've accomplished since 2006. I'm not going to go through all of them. They're start on page 11 of your report. But we do have a new Chief Justice, our very own Justice Tani Cantil Sakauwe, who's a woman of color. The Supreme Court now a majority of women, also a majority of ethnic minorities. African-American judges are almost on a par with the population. We've set up judicial mentoring programs in Alameda, Contra Costa, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and other counties where judicial officers are mentoring people through the appointments process to get more diversity on the bench. Courts have sponsored How to Become a Judge program There's been a slight increase in the percentage of ethnic minority and women judges on the bench. Judges come from a more diverse background, representing the diversity of the cases that are handled in the court system. Family law is handled in the court system. Juvenile, probate. So we've increased ways to get more a more diverse population in terms of people with different backgrounds. There's been legislation that mandates annual statistical data and also a focus on broad experience. The State Bar's Council on Access and Fairness was established. There's been a judicial diversity toolkit for courts. Justice Maria Rivera chaired that group that created the toolkit so that courts have a resource if they want to do things to try to go and try to create more diversity in their particular communities. A transgender judge was elected in Alameda County in the 2010 election. More accomplishments. Again, I won't go through all of them. The State Bar has online tips on applying. There have been changes to the appointment process so that persons with more diverse backgrounds can tout their qualifications to the governor's office. There's a roadshow educational program. And in 2007, the first woman and the first African-American judicial appointment secretary was selected by the governor's office. And there was an all-female confirmation panel for our most recent Supreme Court justice. Of course, the first time that has occurred in our history. Let's look at some pie charts. Ethnic diversity in terms of all courts as of year-end 2011, there were 1,677 sitting judges as of then. And you will see in pie chart form the representation of the various ethnic groups. For our courts of appeal, 101 sitting justices as of December 31st, and again a breakdown in pie chart form of the comparative ethnic representation there. Our superior courts, again a comparative slide, a pie chart. What you're seeing, and then with respect to gender as well, women are over 50% of California's population. They comprise a little bit more than 30% of our bench. So you will see certainly in terms of when you compare it to population and to representation on the bench that we are not at a par. Other diversity in the courts, as of 2012, the AOC now collects the data on sexual preference diversity, LGBT community, those who chose to self-identify, was about 2% of our judiciary. I'm going to show you these slides fairly quickly in the interest of time. These are various counties around the Bay Area where we have compared, as of December 31, the percentage of ethnic population, that is those persons coming into our courts from a very diverse population, and the percentage of ethnic minority judges in these various counties. And I want you to note that ethnic is all non-Caucasian census categories. So Alameda County, I'm a 70% ethnic minority population, which is represented in blue, and a little less than 40% of the judiciary. You look at places such as Santa Clara as you move farther to the right there. Santa Clara, again, almost 68% of the population is ethnic minority, but less than 30% of the bench is. If you move to Central Valley, Fresno, more than 70% of the population in Fresno coming in to have their disputes resolved in the courts will find about 35% of the judiciary there. Tulare, again, a county with high ethnic minority population at more than 71%, and a little more than 5% of the judiciary is ethnic minority. Southern California, same type of trend. Imperial, 91.6% ethnic minority population with about less than half of the bench, 44.5% of the judges are ethnic minority. So as you go through the counties, again, I'm not going to go through each one of them, but you get a snapshot of what it is like for people coming into our courts to resolve their disputes. When you compare population to judiciary statewide, this is sort of a five-year comparative report that we prepared for the summit last year. You'll see if, with respect to the population 2006, that's in blue, the Judicial Council report that talked about the representation of the bench as of December 2000, actually it was as of February 2007, The population for 2010, based on the 2010 census and the maroon or eggplant or whatever color we might call that, and then the Judicial Council report. With respect to the population, you'll see that the Caucasian population has actually dropped. Again, it's 40.1%, but is, again, more than 72% of the bench. And that five-year trend kind of shows you that there's still a lot of work to be done. The gender of judges compared to the population statewide, a five-year snapshot there shows the changes, the increase, a slight increase in terms of women represented on the bench. State bar diversity, California state bar diversity, this slide shows you the percentage representation in the state bar. The various ethnic groups, as well as women and LGBTs, and the numbers look very small, no question about it. But when we talk about why we're looking at population and not bar membership, first we should remember that goal one of California's Judicial Council strategic plan is to achieve a judicial branch that will reflect the diversity of the state's residents. It is an access to justice issue. And as Chief Justice George has said, of course, any judge can fairly hear and decide any case, no matter the parties and regardless of the racial, ethnic, religious, or economic or other minority group to which they might belong. But that it cannot be questioned that a bench that includes members of the various communities served by the courts will help instill confidence in every segment of the public that the courts are indeed open to all. Indeed, in a 2005 report on public trust and confidence in the courts, virtually every ethnic group, not just African Americans, perceived that African Americans and poor litigants received worse outcomes in our court system. Why do we talk about population and not bar membership, which is an easy default position to say that the bar membership is so low? It's because lawyers are not the ones who own these cases and their causes of actions and these claims. It is the clients who own them. These clients come from the general population, not from the bar. These lawyers presumably want fair results for clients, and there's also been an explosion of self-represented litigants, as you members of the Judicial Council know, and these litigants come from the general population. And the reality is that when we talk about public trust and confidence in the court system, we are really talking about general population trust and confidence in our court system. And is the population parity goal achievable? I believe it is. Let's look at these small percentages of bar membership. There are, and if you look, just sort of take a snapshot of people who might potentially apply to the bench or what the potential pool might be. Women who passed the bar between 1979 and 2000, there are more than 53,000 women who potentially eligible. Now, not everybody wants to become a judge. Most of us can't understand why, but many of them don't want to be. African Americans, about 4,500 people we're talking about. Asian Americans, more than 8,500 attorneys. Latinos, more than 6,600. And other minorities, almost 5,000. So there is a huge potential pool from which we could select a more diverse judiciary. There's also been a change in Government Code Section 12011.5 that talks about having the State Bar consider legal experience broadly and to consider other types of experience. And to make sure that we have a more diverse and representative bench. So I am going to turn this over now to Senator Joe Dunn, who will take care and talk with you about the rest of the slides there. And, of course, we will all be available for questions afterward. Senator Dunn.
Thank you, Judge. Good afternoon, Chief Justice. Good afternoon, council members. It's always an honor to be here. As a follow-up to the judge's comment, obviously, I think everybody around the dais knows that we've got a lot of work to go. So I've been given exactly 7 minutes. Most of you know that's an impossibility for Joe Dunn, but I'll do the best that I can. After the summit that the judge referred to and the recommendations, of course, the Board of Trustees, maybe most of you remember it as the Board of Governors, is now the Board of Trustees of the State Bar, reviewed and very warmly embraced virtually all of the recommendations that fall within its purview. because some of the recommendations do not, which will be addressed in just a few minutes. It embraced the recommendations and referred to the Council on Access and Fairness for further action. Council on Access and Fairness, of course, has already conducted a comprehensive review of the recommendation and developed an action plan to address the recommendations that the bar and the Council on Access and Fairness will collaborate with the Judicial Council, of course, and the advisory committees in addressing those recommendations. And so I'd like to go through those very, very quickly. Hopefully I have not gone too far into my 7 minutes quite yet. As the judge already indicated, the Council on Access and Fairness sorted the recommendations into three areas. You can see on the slide here. Area number one is the follow-up by the Council on Access and Fairness and stakeholders. Second, joint projects by the Council and the Judicial Council Advisory Committees. And then third, of course, the projects within the Judicial Council purview only. Those are the three categories that the Council on Access and Fairness divided up the recommendations. So let me address the ones that were COAF direct follow-up versus joint projects, and they are starting with, as you can see there, judicial appointments and elections. This is to seek established uniform process and factors for the use by the judicial review committees. Some of you have served or are serving on those review committees. And second, to provide implicit bias training to the review committees. I should note here that the Council has worked very closely with the Governor's Office. I think most all of you recognize that judicial appointments fall directly with the Governor's Office, and no governor, I don't care whether Republican or Democrat, likes to agree to any limitations on their powers. But this governor, as many of the most recent governors have, both sides of the aisle, been very, very open to the recommendations coming from our now two summits. And they did indicate that they will encourage their review committees as we put these programs out into the field, that their members of those review committees, they will encourage them to attend. With respect to the leaky pipeline, you all know what I'm referring to when I refer to the pipeline. We all wish it hasn't been leaking, but it, of course, has. You've already seen the statistics that the judge indicated. Recommendations that will be addressed by solely the Council on Access and Fairness, application of tool to identify factors for effective lawyering. What this means is, should we embrace here in California other factors beyond just LSAT and GPA for getting into law school? And many of you know Professor Marjorie Schultz and her professional partner at UC Berkeley Law in identifying, I think it's 26 factors that make for successful lawyering that ought to be looked at as potential ones. We believe these will help in ensuring that we have a very diverse bench and also, of course, bar as well. Second, seeking private funding for students from economically disadvantaged backgrounds to take LSAT prep courses and conducting outreach to law schools to focus on creating an on-campus atmosphere of inclusion for diverse students. This is still a criticism we hear at many of our law schools, including many of our top law schools here in California. Continuing on the direct follow-up recommendations, data collection and accessibility, continued review of the data to ensure transparency. The judge already referenced a Senate Bill 56 by a certain former senator. Unfortunately, it's not a perfect solution because the numbers still are reported differently. Sometimes we get percentages, sometimes we get raw numbers, and it's tough to compare apples to apples. We continue to work on that, and the Council will continue to work on that. Council on Access and Fairness also monitors feedback from the applicants for the glitches on the online application, as you see there in the middle of the slide. And also, the Council will be working on initiatives to encourage presiding judges to consider diversity in making assignments that fall within the purview of the presiding judges across the state, whether that be for complex panels, criminal assignments, civil assignments. This is still, unfortunately, a huge challenge within our bench, not only to get diversity on the bench, but then to ensure diversity in the actual assignments in each county that fall within the purview of our presiding judges. Moving on to proposed joint projects, this is between the Council on Access and Fairness and the Judicial Council Advisory Committees. Again, judicial appointments election. This is really an outreach, heavily focused on outreach, presentation to law schools to improve understanding of the judiciary and the role of the judiciary and the value of judicial diversity, as the judge indicated. Joint outreach and recruitment of potential diverse judicial applicants. This is still a challenge that we all must pitch in and strive to correct. and joint mentoring of applicants for the appointment process to make sure there's nothing about that process that has some inherent bias or obstacles to it, and to work with the applicants. And also under the leaky pipeline, joint community education, especially to communities underrepresented in the legal profession. You already saw the slides. That's unfortunately many of our communities here in California. Continuing on proposed joint projects, also on the data collection and accessibility, outreach to increase judicial applicants by attorneys with disabilities, and creating protocols for compiling SB 56 data. I already referenced that one as well. Under the outreach and education, continued outreach jointly, obviously, between bench and bar, Council on Access and Fairness, Judicial Council itself, and the bench, outreach to youth, raid the judicial system. This is, we're trying to touch upon this in many different perspectives, including, of course, the chief leading the way on hopefully a return of civics education, civic literacy within our schools and with society at large, and whether we do an annual judicial summit, which was recommended, or as the Council on Access and Fairness is recommending, convening smaller meetings in the six appellate districts over the next 2 years regarding the report and the recommendations. And then lastly, on the joint projects is addressing the glass ceiling, is educating potential applicants raise the importance and significance of all court assignments, and compiled data on the diversity of judicial assignments in civil, felony trials, law in motion, complex cases, etc., which up to now hasn't been done, or at least hasn't been done on a statewide basis. And finally, to educate attorneys and the public, the rules and process for court assignments to get more visibility on this issue to ensure diversity at all levels of the both bench and bar, and on the bench, as I said, that includes the assignment of judges as well, too. I think I went a little over my 7 minutes. Let me now turn it over to someone everyone on the council knows and knows well, Justice Lambert.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Madam Chief Justice, members of the council, and all of our assembled guests. It's always a pleasure to come and present one of these reports to the council, and as I was listening to the Chief's kind remarks listing the accomplishments of all of us, but certainly of the Access and Fairness Committee, I was reminded that one thing I do at all our committee meetings is to go through that list and remind us how far we've come. I was also reminded by the Chief's remarks that there's a certain circularity here, because it was in 1993 that the Gender Bias Report was commissioned and reported to a similar group as this. And that really was the beginning of the Access and Fairness Committee and the beginning of so many of the projects that we've discussed, including what led up to the strategic goal number one adopted by the Council, which is to assure access, fairness, and diversity. In that circularity of about 20 years, I was also reminded of the Chief's very perceptive remark that, look what happens when the women come in. Because looking around the room, we do have a third woman on the bench now, and the change that has been accomplished by that inclusiveness, I think, drives this entire conversation. I had the pleasure of serving on the Summit Planning Committee with Joe. I think you were in the 7 minutes myself. It's the shortest I've ever seen Joe speak.
It would be a miracle.
And I'm very pleased by that. I have to remark, and I won't repeat all the thanks, that Judge Harbin Ford has been the engine that drove this diversity report, has been tireless and worked very hard on that. Senator Dunn, who has demonstrated through his organization's support of this the possibilities that can occur with collaboration. I want to stress personally that this was done really on the cheap, and we did it because of the ability to collaborate with the state bar. For example, when you do a summit and you bring everybody from all over the state, there's a lot of travel expense. We made the simple step of just trying to double up and go where the people were, where we knew they would be. We saved a lot of money that way, and it's a model for how we can proceed in the future by collaborating not just with the state bar, but with other groups as well. I also have to mention, because staff is ever on our mind, that our own Donna Clay Conti from the AOC and also Pat Lee from the state bar, there were more involved, were very instrumental in getting this report finished, and it's an elaborate and very well-done report that we can be proud of. You've received a lot of information today. I'm not going to go through all those recommendations again. You'll have a chance to ask us some questions. But as I have, as Joe has pointed out, many of these things are already in place. Many of them need to be considered by the advisory committees in order to proceed on those recommendations that involve us most directly. We know that all of the work that needs to be done on these recommendations must take into account the current situation with the economy and our budget. And for those reasons and the other challenges that are facing the branch today, we hope to continue the sort of collaboration that resulted in this report. And the Access and Fairness Advisory Committee, I believe, is the appropriate entity to undertake that work, at least to start it, and we will collaborate with the other committees. I shouldn't say we, since, as we know, I'm leaving after today. And I am prepared, therefore, as my last formal act as chair of the committee, to request that the Judicial Council direct the Access and Fairness Advisory Committee to consider the report's recommendations and to initiate the review and approval process for those that merit council attention. Thank you for your attention, and we will be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you. Judge Rosenberg.
Thank you very much for that informative presentation. Thank you, Chief. Let me preface my question by saying that my entire adult life I have supported diversity for women minorities. I really believe in that. And but I want to ask a real practical question. There's about 1,700 judges. I suspect it takes about 20 years or so to have a turnover. More or less of the entire bench. The most troublesome issue, I think, for me and maybe for others, is the issue of whether the ethnic and gender diversity of the bench should reflect diversity in the general population of California or whether it should reflect the diversity within eligible members of the bar, because obviously the bench is drawn from a limited universe of people. That is, members of the bar who've been members of the bar for 10 years or more. So, has anyone ever analyzed the question of how long would it take? Let's assume that every single appointment to the bench from today forward were of a woman or an ethnic person in an ethnic minority. Every single one, without fail. How long would it take to achieve the parity to the general population of California?
I'll give it the short answer that Ron George gave, which is that the reform is not for the short-winded. It's a marathon rather than a sprint. So we can't say how long, but it's going to be a long time. And that's why the focus shifted within the last few years to this pipeline idea, that you really have to start way back in grammar school if you want to make sure that people move forward. And that has a certain attraction to it because it attempts to solve societal problems as well via our input from the branch. That's all I will say.
Mm-hmm. And I think the larger question should be, it's going to take a long time. Does that mean we do nothing? Or does it mean that we continue incrementally to try to increase diversity on the bench? I think that's the important question for all of us. It's going to be hard. Progress is difficult, and progress is hard, and progress takes a long, long time, but we should strive for it because it is doable.
Justice Miller.
So I wanted to commend one of your past state bar presidents, Jim Hiding from Riverside, who was involved in the diversity pipeline, who came to the desert where I practiced law but was a judge at that time a number of years ago with a program called Adopt a High School. Mm-hmm. And in essence, it was for this same purpose in some respect. I mean, it was to provide lawyers and judges to high schools for their government programs and things of that nature. But it was also to hopefully encourage young high school students in the minority areas of the Coachella Valley to consider going to law school. And the Desert Bar Association piloted that program, adopted it. This last year, we rolled it out to the membership of the Desert Bar. Other law firms and lawyers are going to now adopt other high schools in the Coachella Valley. And yes, it will take marathon years for that maybe to show results, but already we have a number of young high school students who have said that it's encouraged them to go on to college to consider becoming a lawyer. So it is, in that regards, a program, but it does take time, a great program.
Judge Herman, then Judge O'Malley, then Judge Jacobson.
Yeah, I just say as a, you know, disclosing, as a member of the Judicial Diversity Pipeline and a member of the Commission on Access to Justice, and I see that Mary Flynn is here, and she's a State Bar long-time staff support. I just highly commend this effort. And if, are we looking for a motion to make this recommendation? Is that?
We will, yes. Are you making a motion?
I'd make that motion, yes.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, so we have 3 seconds. We have Judge Jacobson, Judge Baker, and Justice Baxter. Judge O'Malley.
I'd like to thank the panel for the hard work that they've done in this regard. I think it's very important. I know that in Contra Costa County, we have started the high schools a program that are law academies, and they streamline their education into the area and field of law. And they come to the court, and they have, you know, a day with the court and the judges, and we get them lunch and talk and visit with them, and they study the legal system as well as, you know, mock trial that's very, very active throughout the high schools. And they come into the courts to do their trials, and the judges sit as judges that preside over those trials. And I agree, you have to start early and to be able to instill in them, you know, the passion, the excitement, the education to know that this is an area and a field to which they would love. So I commend you, and anything we can do to support you, I'm all for it.
Judge Jacobson and Justice Baxter.
I just want to acknowledge the three of you, Senator Dunn, Justice Lambdon, and particularly you, Judge Hartman Forte. This reading inspires, and nothing against all the stuff we have to read, but it certainly inspires a lot more than some of the other stuff we've read the last few days. The bottom line is that this is moving us in the proper direction, and I really think your work is wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Justice Baxter.
You really can't talk about this subject without talking about California women lawyers, so you want to be a judge program.
Yes.
And by coincidence, I had the pleasure of having lunch yesterday with the founder of that program, Judge Cherlin. So I want to recognize her as really the person that put that program into place. I think it had a very beneficial effect in terms of encouraging women and minorities to apply at a time when the numbers within the bar were very, very low. The other point I want to make, and I don't want to draw any conclusions, but I got the impression during the presentation that the terms ethnicity and race were used interchangeably. And in my opinion, that would be a very insensitive way to present the case. My grandfather and my parents would turn over in their graves if they were just lumped into this category of those who did not sustain prejudice, because they couldn't buy property in our area. And so the varied reasons for diversity apply to Caucasians who come from ethnic backgrounds.
Yes.
So I urge you not to I urge you to distinguish between those two terms, because they're not one and the same.
Judge Ellsworth?
May I just say, Justice Baxter, I believe, was the first judicial appointment secretary to do the program with CWL. Mm-hmm. So he goes back that far in terms of his actions and activities in terms of increasing diversity on the bench. And it was focused at that time on gender diversity, but has expanded.
So I want to echo also the thanks and gratitude for your hard work. You know, I come from a county that has, I believe, the only African-American, or for the whole state, female appellate justice, who is my dear friend Carol Codrington. And in Riverside County, for all these years, we've just now had appointed in the last year our first Latina judge, female Latina, which has been a long time in the coming. I don't think we can understate one of the points you made, where we have a lot of power with regard to reaching out to presiding judges up and down the state in terms of assignments as well as their assistance in how to promote the appointment of individuals that would help us fill this diversity gap. So I think that this report really can make a difference in the hands of educated presiding judges up and down the state to use this as for those 2 points. And I would urge us to share that and to also use it as an educational component as to it's not only getting the right individuals to apply and to promote them, but once you have that great fortune, what kinds of assignments are you looking at, and what do the assignments that you make say, and are there biases there that you're not aware of that need to be checked, and how we can check those biases? So it's very much in line with, I think, your report to take it a step further. So thank you.
Senator Ben.
If I may, Chief Justice, I just want to add one additional thing here on behalf of us at the State Bar, including the great staff that are here, Pat Lee and Mary Flynn and the rest of the team. Just to drive home the point from an earlier question about we've made great progress, but how much work we have left to do, and it's daunting. I've had the privilege of serving side by side with Mark Robinson over the past 10 years plus in creating the law school at UCI, of course, under the great leadership of Erwin Chemerinsky. And through that process, we learned 2 years ago, that of top 20 law schools, there were only 17 African-American males in the country that had GPAs and LSATs to earn admission to a top 20 law school. That was just 2 years ago. We have a lot of work to go, Chief.
Thank you. I want to say that you referred to it as a lot of labor, and I know all of us here, myself definitely included, consider the work that we have before us in this area to be a labor of love. I would say that in speaking of Dean Chemerinsky, I was at the Diversity Awards last year at the State Bar where he spoke about the numbers, the pipeline into college and the pipeline out of college, and how we lose folks in the pipeline out of college in order to even begin the pipeline into law school. I wanted to say, too, that in this labor of love, I also respect all that you have done and want to point out that I especially am grateful for the work and the support that you give to the ethnic bar associations. You know, they struggle, they start up, but your committees reach out and assist and support them by attending the dinners and giving them the information and including them and with open arms to feel that they belong to part of the movement of the state, of the diversity of the legal profession and the bench. And it's all evident in the award ceremony and in the diversity program. And I commend you, and I would really like to take the opportunity to have Donna Clay Conti stand, as well as Pat Lee, as well as Mary Flynn Lavery, who do this act of love for all of us. And so we come to that part where the motion's been made and seconded by 3. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Matter carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you all.
Thank you.
We will take a 15-minute recess, but I'd ask that the new appointees and the reappointed members stay and gather under the seal so we can take a photograph, and we'll return at 4:40. Thank you.